And if you have been a long-time listener of this radio station, you'd remember the voice of my next guest very well. For almost 25 years, Stan Thompson was the voice of ABC Southeast as the morning's presenter. I had the joy of working for him for several years as his producer before he kindly handed me the studio keys upon his retirement from a very long career in radio. Stan's now a published author. His new book, 356, Recall the Truth, Fear the Perception, set in post-World War II in Scotland. It's a story of betrayal, political unrest and mysterious friendship. I popped out to visit Stan recently, got to sit down with him for a coffee and a chat. Hello, Stan. It feels like an age since we caught up.
Yeah, isn't it good? And we're not talking about radio, we're talking about the written word.
We are, but I'm going to start off by talking about radio, unfortunately, because I know a lot of people will be listening who, you know, were long-time listeners of yours and wonder what you've been up to and obviously been writing a book, but, you know, how have you been?
Fine, actually. I think I enjoy this retirement lark, really. It's amazing. I think the magic time is when you wake up in the morning and your natural inclination is to, oh, gosh, I better get to work sort of thing. And you think, well, I don't have to do that anymore, you know. So you get back to bed again. Actually, no, I haven't done that. I don't think I've gotten lazy. It's odd, Dad. I'm still getting up early in the morning. And to catch up on news and what have you, but the mood's a lot. I'm a lot calmer person, I think, as a result of it.
Yeah. I would say the old body clock would still be getting you up pretty early.
Oh, yes, yeah, and I'm happy with that. It's the best time of the day, as you would attest to. Wouldn't you, Selena?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely, firing all cylinders nice and early.
Well, you see so many sunrises. Mm-hmm. The beautiful. No, I like that time of day. What else have I been doing? Oh, we've been doing a bit of volunteering work. We've been doing some house sitting still. Of course, COVID came along and knocked that on the head. And we were going to travel. Haven't been to Melbourne for yonks. As part of my family, I haven't seen for quite a while. So I guess that's what... I had started this book before I retired. But I realised that I could go on uninterrupted now, and that's why I got onto it.
So you were working on this when you and I were still working together, but I think you kept that under your hat pretty well. How far along was it, and how much then did having that extra time in retirement help you sort of finish it off?
Interesting. Going back to while I was still working with you, I had actually written the story and finished it. So I thought, looked around for publishers and said, look, you've got to publish this. And somebody pointed out to me that there was only 78 pages. I said, what, that's not long enough. And they said, no. The publisher said, look, we'll publish it for you. It's your money, but you might want to rethink it. So I thought, well, rather than a novel, I'll have a novella. And then I thought, no, I don't want to do it. But that was hard because I had reached a point where I had finished the story. How do you extend it further? So I did, and it was one of those moments, Selena, you hear about it, and I never thought I'd experience it, but you get the thought in the middle of the night. And so I literally got up, staggered to the computer, and started. And I wrote what is now the second half of this book. And then it all started to flow because I'd reconnected. It's like I tied the knot on the main characters and said, goodbye, I don't want you anymore. Off, live your life. But I had reunited myself with them through this little thing that I had done. And then I ended up with, 280 pages. So the publisher felt a lot happier about publishing that.
So let's talk about the name of the book firstly, 356. And this is a number, and we're going to talk a bit about how much of yourself and your own autobiographical story and memories are in this book, but that is a number that has significance to you personally?
356 Easter Road in Leith, which many people would know is sort of a port town of Edinburgh. Sort of a bit like, for those that don't know, it's sort of a bit like Port Adelaide, I suppose, is to Adelaide. That was the house that my mother brought me home to when I was born. And that is the house that's on the front cover. It's that photo that my son actually took. The mysterious person with the umbrella wasn't there. That was an afterthought, and if you read the story properly, you'll know why he's standing there looking all sorts of mysterious. But yeah, 356 Easter Road. And also that 356 keeps cropping up as a number pertaining to all things. Now, I'd be spoiling the story if I let you know what else it pertains to, but it became such a prominent thing in my head, 356, so why don't I call it that? And then again, talking with people, they say, oh, you need something else. Well, there has a lot to do with truth and perception, and that's something that's fascinated me. You know, what is your truth may not be my truth, my perception, and my perception is my truth, that sort of thing. So I thought, well, let's put add on to it, 356, recall the truth, yeah, because that's what I'm doing, but fear the perception, because particularly the relationship between Craig and his father, it's all to do with truth and what Craig thought about his father. I explored that, I think. So I thought it was a good thing to add on to 356.
And I guess that concept of truth is sometimes all about just where you happen to be standing at the time.
Yes. How often have you thought to yourself, well, here's a true situation that's happening now, then a week later you may rethink it and you think, well, hang on a minute, I see it differently now. So perception, and as I keep saying, perception is truth because it's what I believe, it's my truth. Does that make sense?
That makes absolute sense. But I was going to ask, as a broadcaster, when you spent years and years talking to people from all different walks of life about different things, and sometimes people from different walks of life about their own perception of things, do you think that gives you a unique perspective yourself on that sometimes truth is just can be very much about people's perceptions, about their backgrounds, about where they're coming from, where you are quite often would talk to people over the years who have their own perception, and you talk to the very next person who has a completely different idea of what the truth is.
And they both sound reasonable. Yes. You would have found that. Yes. People that interview politicians of either side, you'll sit with somebody and think, yep, that's pretty reasonable, yeah. So-and-so, he's a so-and-so. And he gets so-and-so in and you think, oh, I see. Oh, hang on a minute. And you end up, you're not really quite sure. Well, you've got an election coming up. You end up thinking, well, they all sound pretty valid, what they're saying. But so the truth is somewhere in the middle. And it's up to us to get into the middle and find it. You know, and we may never find it. We may be just left with perception.
You're on ABC Southeast with Selena Green this morning, and it is 20 minutes past 9. You're listening to a conversation that I had with my predecessor here at ABC Southeast, former mornings presenter Stan Thompson, but now published author. We're talking about his brand new book, 356, Recall the Truth, Fear the Perception. This, I wanted to come back about the autobiographical nature of the book. How autobiographical is it? Because one of the main characters, a young man who grows up in Scotland, emigrates to Australia, that kind of resonates with your own personal story.
Exactly, yes, I was born there. Interesting thing happened on one of our trips back to the UK. My wife and I went to Edinburgh, and Carol she caught the flu, not COVID, it was before, it was BC, before COVID. Yeah. And she said, oh, don't feel well. I said, okay, well, let's get to the hotel, put you in. And she went to bed. And she said, oh, can you go to the chemist and get some pain relief? And she said, do you know where a chemist is? And I immediately could recall where there was a chemist just off Princes Street in Edinburgh. And the reason is, and I bring that up in the book, is that when I was a kid, I'd been scoffing too much on strawberry milkshakes, I think it was, and I threw up on the steps of Waverley Station, and my furious mother dragged me by the hand and took me into the chemist at Waverley Station. And that, why does that stay with me, Selena? Why has that little episode stayed there? But it enabled me to go to a chemist to get a painkiller for my wife, you know? And that amazed me. And I've actually put that in the book because Craig remembers where the chemist shop is and he hadn't been there for 65 years or something, you know? Autobiographical, not really, other than 356 Easter Road, and everything else is really fictional. But it is in the genre of historical fiction, and it's a genre I've got a problem with. We talk about the Second World War. That definitely happened. No one's arguing that. But what I've done is created fictional characters and put them into that true scenario. So I'm mucking around with the truth a bit, aren't I? You know? I mean, we go to D-Day, for goodness sake, and Normandy, you know, just for a flash. Did we? Yeah, because it sounded good. But all the factual stuff I'm quite happy with. I've done a lot of research and that's the truth. You know, what happened, the invasion at Normandy and all the rest of it. And I was fascinated by the whole history of the thing.
I meant to ask about that because there are bits of military history and there are flashbacks to certain campaigns or parts of the war or historical references in there, but also some really fascinating little references to things that Craig encounters in and around, you know, his home and Scotland while he's there. Some interesting little facts of things that he, you know, comes across and memories that are spurred. So how much of that was already stuff kicking and rattling around in your brain and how much of it is stuff that you then had to go up and sort of do that research?
A lot of it was in my brain and it was backed up by the research. One of the things... there is an episode in the book that I talk about that I worried a little bit, I agonised over whether I should say anything, because my father he couldn't go to a war because of, he had rheumatic fever, so he couldn't enlist, but he joined the Red Cross instead. And so he served the war in as part of the Red Cross, not in actual combat, but looking after returned personnel. And when the war was over, he said his job actually got worse because he's having all these displaced people coming and saying, help me, I need a home, I need this, that and the other. That was exacerbated by the Poles and the Italians and the Indians, the people who had joined in the Allied victory, in fact helped Britain and the Allies win the war. Poles particularly, because I do have a character in there who is a Polish person who escaped Poland when Germany took over and he came to Britain and joined the army and he saw service there. At the end of the war, they said, well, thank you very much, you can go now. He became a displaced person. He couldn't go back to Poland because the communists were after that to set up a government there, which they didn't want. So he said, well, I'll stay here. But no, Britain said, no, you can't stay here. We haven't got room for you. And then, of course, that whole battle of think, well, I did this for you. I risked my life for you and you can't even give me a roof over my head. He was treated as an illegal visitor, if you like. Yeah, so he's left homeless, stateless, penniless to a degree. I think they gave him 2 and 6 to buy a meal with, and that was the end of it. And that happened so much that my character is fictional, but that's exactly what my father was up against, dealing with the way the authorities, he would go to them with a case for this guy from Poland, and they said, well, he's not our concern. Send him back to Poland. And that wasn't an option.
I reckon you could fill the MCG about a million times over with people who say, I'm going to write a book one day, especially when I retire. I'm going to have all that time. I'm going to write a book. You have joined a very select list of people who've actually got around to doing that and writing a book and getting published. Would you recommend it? Or talk us about the process of getting to this point where I'm holding your physical book in my hand.
I'd recommend it thoroughly, Selena. I had lots of trouble with publishers and printers and what have you, because have you ever thought about that world? If there are any listening to me,
for goodness sake, get your act together, will you?
I'll hasten to add that I'm very happy with the eventual book. It looks good, it feels good, I'm totally happy with it. However, the road to get there was a bit bumpy. They assume you know everything about publishing. They ask you down to the smallest diameter of your text, you know, and you haven't got a clue. I find there's no one there that will say, take your hand and advocate for you and help you through it. They just expect you to know things. Fortunately, I found a printer. I wanted to get it totally published and printed, if not locally, as in the Limestone Coast, at least South Australia. I don't know why, I just had a desire to do that. That was hard. Mm. It was really hard. The competition from overseas is, oh, it's so tempting. But I managed to get it done sort of semi-locally, I guess. That is, writing the book is easy. The rest of it is quite hard if you're a first-timer. But I thoroughly recommend it. Do it.
Now the question that every published author hates. When's the next one? Stan, do you reckon you've got another one?
Next weekend. I am writing another one. And I don't know if this is coincidence or not. Well, it is coincidence. A totally coincidence. It takes place in the Ukraine. Now, go figure.
Mm.
How did that happen? It's got a strong Australian side to it, this second one. But just like the first one, I've got 78 pages written.
I've been 300 more.
Yeah, just 300 more.
A doddle.
And when we finish this, I'll have to go back into the office and start doing it. Mm. But I love it. You've created a little world for yourself that you enjoy escaping into, and those characters, they're yours. And I've also been pretty careful to enable a sequel to this to be made. If not so much a sequel to the story, but the characters will live on in another story. I have another one. So the one I'm working on hopefully will be out in about, well, it'll be ready in about 6 months. I've got this other story that will bring some of the characters in 356 back to life again.
Stan Thompson there, and published author 356, Recall the Truth, Fear the Perception, is his new book that we've been talking about. You'll be actually able to catch Stan and his book at an author event and launch. It's happening on Saturday, the 26th of March at 2 p.m. at Mount Gambier City Hall. I'll be on stage having a chat with him. He's invited me to come along and ask him some more probing questions on stage. So come and say hi to us both. There's a special performance planned by the Mount Gambier Blue Lake Highland Pipe Band and Jody Swiggs as well. So if you'd like to come along Saturday, the 26th of March, 2 p.m. at Mount Gambier City Hall to catch Stan talking about his book, contact the Mount Gambier Public Library.